Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. This week, I speak to mother and blogger Eileen Loughlin.
And I do firmly believe she is here and in spirit, and she leaves signs, and yes, I still talk to her.
Yeah.
And I still say in the morning, like, we go in, her room is as is, and she has a little lamp, and we turn it on in the morning and open her blind, and I say, good morning, Missy Moo, and like, I just chat to her and say, I hope you're having a nice day and you met lots of friends. And if we're doing something, I'd say, now keep an eye out on your brothers or help them out, or, you know. And I just over the years have spotted little signs.
Eileen lives in Delvin, County Westmeath, with her husband Enda and their two sons, Senan, who's 16, and TJ, who's almost 9. And over 2.5 years ago, her life changed forever when their then 3.5-year-old daughter Annabelle died in a freak accident in their home. Now, at 22 weeks pregnant, she shares how profound the grieving process is, especially with a new addition on the way, how keeping Annabelle's spirit alive is so important to her, and how she feels her presence with her. This is our conversation.
I have to say, I was very flattered when you contacted me on Instagram and suggested that we might have a conversation, because it was like you read my mind. I had wanted to reach out to you for a very long time, if I'm perfectly honest. Last year, you were on the list of people that I wanted to talk to. And then you appeared on Brian Dowling's grief podcast, Death Becomes Him, which is fantastic. And I felt like she was meant to do that. That was meant to happen. And I thought I'd leave you be. And then I heard about your news about being pregnant. And I was thinking, I wonder, would she, if I asked her, would she do it? And then you contacted me. So it felt like the timing was right. So thank you so much for reaching out. I'm delighted you're here today.
Yeah, I love listening to all your podcasts, and I know I did Brian's, and I have been asked to do one or two, not many since, but I always knew if I was to do another one, I would love to do your one. And it was, again, watching your stories, and I think the week you said you were 18 weeks pregnant, I was like, oh my God, I am the exact same. And again, this thing with numbers, and just there and then I was like, do you know what? Bite the bullet, get in touch. And then both of us kind of felt the same. So yeah, that feeling of it's meant to be,
yeah,
or something.
For sure, for sure. Let's start with that. Congratulations.
Thank you. And to you too.
Yeah. So we're both 22 weeks pregnant now.
Yeah, I'm just today. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How are you feeling?
Good, good. I'm good now. Once I hit the second trimester, it was just like a switch. I went from feeling awful in the first trimester and just constantly nauseous and tired and... Yeah, but you do quickly forget those feelings, and I feel good now and I'm enjoying it because like that I know what to expect nearly in the third trimester. So I'm going to enjoy this now while it is a bit easier to just get around and do things.
Yeah. Is it different being pregnant after everything you have been through?
Yeah, definitely. I think I wake up every morning and I see the bump and I nearly can't believe or something that I'm actually really pregnant again. And I suppose I had Senan when I was 21, so that definitely was a different experience. You know, people were happy, but at the same time at 21 they were kind of concerned that I was young and things like that. And then when we announced we were pregnant this time, like, just people's levels of happiness were just unbelievable. And I understand it's obviously because what we've gone through, but it is different. And there's a lot more questions, a lot more worries, down to even the basic, I'm older, you know. I think what I've been through, what we've been through, like, I know now I follow like hashtags on Instagram, grieving mothers or grieving parents. So you see a lot more. I'm at Witsenan when I was 21. Talk about ignorant. Like, I just thought you get pregnant, you have a baby, all is wonderful. Like, yeah, I didn't realize, you know, the amount of things that could go wrong, the amount of things that do go wrong, and just how, you know, so much of it is outside of your control. So it's totally different. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would imagine you've probably changed radically as a person in the last few years after everything you've been through.
Yeah. So I just suppose by the nature of Annabelle's accident that it was sudden. And again, like, it's just your certainty in the world is completely turned upside down. You don't take anything for granted.
Yeah.
And I think even with this pregnancy, I kind of thought, well, I'll get to the 12 weeks and then, you know, I might be more confident about everything. And then I thought, well, I'll get to the scan and everything will be fine. And even now I find myself, well, we'll get the anomaly scan and then I might start thinking about looking at a buggy or buying vests. You know, I just feel like I haven't fully let myself get too excited about it.
Yeah.
But I do think it will come in time, you know.
And that's, I would imagine, completely normal. Especially after the level of loss that you've experienced, which is unfathomable for most people, including myself. And we kind of went into the deep end straight away, so hope you're okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Annabelle?
Yeah, yeah. No, I probably will tear up, and it's... I say this to people, it's not that they're making me sad talking about her. Like, I'm happy, I love talking about her, but it just is hard because it is sad.
Of course it is.
But, you know, she was just such a little character. So obviously we had the two boys, and then I did really want a girl. Mm. And I always said that to Enda, like, we're going to keep going till we get a girl. And then Annabelle came, and like, I was over the moon. Mm. You know, and from day dot, like, she arrived 10 stone 5 pound, like, you know, it's she met her mark.
Yes.
And
yeah,
we've always said, like, there's a lot of boys on Enda's side. I think maybe 14 boys in a row.
Okay,
and then
wow,
this little girl came. So yeah,
she was,
but yet she was just so full of devilment. Like, she was a real messer.
Yeah.
And she was outgoing. Like, you wouldn't have called her shy or introverted. She was really outgoing, wanted to be stuck in the middle of everything. Like herself and TJ, there's about 2.5 years between them. So, and we'd be down at the pitch, maybe at Sennans, trainings or games. And the two of them just headed off around the pitch. They made friends. Even like she had this pair of Skechers light up runners, which I can't believe I ever even bought. Like, I'm not a fan of them. But like, it was getting dark and all you could see were these little runners in the distance, and they were running around together, happy out. Yeah, like when she walked into a room, she wanted people to notice her. Like, she, you always felt her presence. And sometimes I do think, like, as a mother, am I remembering that, like, is that really the truth? But it is, because the other boys are so different. Like, TJ would walk into a room and would not want anyone to see him. He's a completely different kettle of fish, you know. So this was definitely her personality. Like, you'd be in the back of the car and the boys would hop in after school and they'd be telling you their story from the day, and she'd just make up a random story. Like, that didn't happen, but she just had to be part of the conversation, you know. And she just, like, she didn't walk until she was maybe 17 or 18 months. So she was a late walker, but by God, could she talk?
That's it. They always say that.
Yeah.
It's either one or the other,
isn't
it?
Yeah. So she was full of chat, and like, she loved all the sports and the boys, but we all, myself and Annabelle, would go for like our little coffee and hot chocolates, and she'd sit, and she was great company. Like, it'd just be me and her, and I'd yap away to her, and I don't even know about what. But, you know, we had our little girly things.
Yeah. And as you said, she was such a character. Some kids, just their personality is all there from such an early age.
Yeah.
And clearly with her, that's exactly what it was. And all the clips I've ever seen of her on Instagram that you share, we see that. We see that mischievous look in her eye, and the fact that she was, it looked like she was just always up for the crack.
Yes.
And wanted to just be in amongst the thick of it.
Yeah, myself and Enda used to say, like, she is going to be hard work when she hits teenage years. Like, I've said this before, but like, we always said, God, she's going to break our hearts. And she has done, but just in such a different way.
Of course.
You know, but yeah, she was going to keep us on our toes.
So you can imagine what's probably going through my head now. You're probably thinking, she's going to have to ask, or she will ask me about what happened. And it is a very uncomfortable thing to ask you. So I can only begin to imagine what it's like for you to even try and respond to. And I won't ask you to go into details, because that's not appropriate. It's not necessary. And the last thing I want to do is to re-traumatise you, because I'm sure you replay that day an awful lot, unfortunately. But in November 2018, on a Friday morning, like any other Friday morning, the unimaginable happened.
So we were, it was midterm break, so we were all on school holidays, and it was Friday, and we'd done lovely things all that week, which was, looking back, lovely to have gotten to spend that time together. And we were going to go to the cinema in the afternoon, so it was just up and getting ready, and like, up early with small ones, I suppose, and two other friends were down already. And like I say, it was, I think, maybe 9:30 when they came down. But just pottering about. So Annabelle, TJ and their friend were playing. I was in the kitchen and they were in the sitting room just off the kitchen. And I just heard a loud crash, and I thought they'd broken a vase or something. But I kind of stormed into the room, what's going on? And it just took me like a second to even comprehend what had gone on. So some of the fireplace had collapsed, and Annabelle was on the ground. And it was just from that moment a case of called 999. Sennan was amazing that day. Like, we live in the countryside, so we are a good 20-30 minutes from our nearest hospital, and I thought, maybe I'll just bring her and, you know, Senan spoke to 999 and they were very much no, stay put. And Senan was like, Mommy, you have to stay here. And he was great. And the ambulance came and he went to the top of the lane because, you know, just so they'd know where they're going, and brought the ambulance down. And again, they were great. And it was just like, someone did say, like, if you had to watch that in a movie, you actually wouldn't. Like, there's no point me even trying to describe it. And I'm not one, I just don't want to go into the gory details.
Like,
no one needs to know it,
no,
you know, like
no.
The people that were there and I had to witness it, it's bad enough. But yeah, then a helicopter came, which, like, I hadn't even expected it. Obviously, we didn't ring one, but it landed in the field beside us. And they airlifted Annabelle to, initially she was going to Beaumont Hospital. And when we landed, they actually said she was going to Temple Street. So, you know, we obviously found out since then, Temple Street, because it deals with children, you know, that's why she went there. And they did everything they could. We actually did get to meet the team up there. And the doctor we met that day, and just asked them any questions we had, and they were amazing. Like she did have a heartbeat, and she was still very much alive when she got to Temple Street, you know, but she couldn't talk back to us. Just from it, her jaw had locked. So, like, obviously we constantly spoke to her, but she couldn't talk back to us. And they were lovely. They told us, look, she wouldn't have been in pain. The first thing the paramedics did was give her pain relief. And anyone that has been concussed would know you don't necessarily remember the pain. So, like, that gave us comfort. So, yeah, and obviously it was a Friday. He was at work. So, again, got in touch with him. And I think he was halfway between Mullingar and Dublin. But he got to Temple Street just as the ambulance was pulling in with myself and Annabelle. And we waited in our room. And then family came up. And then the nurse or doctor came out to us and said, you can go in and see her. And, like, I genuinely thought she was fine. Not that she was fine, but
she pulled through.
Yeah. And when we got in, they just told us, and they have to be blunt in what they say, like, she's dying, you need to say goodbye. And it is every mother's and every father's worst nightmare. And it is as difficult as you think it's going to be. It was just, it felt like, it just didn't feel like it was my life I was in. It felt like you were watching something else. And you just looked at all these people in the room and you were kind of like, can none of ye do anything? And we did. We got to say goodbye. And they were lovely. I got to lie up beside her and got to sing her Twinkle Twinkle. But
I'll take her time.
Yeah, so, you know, it is. And obviously, it is difficult to go through, and I don't go through it very often, and people might wonder, well, why are you going through it now? But there is a sense of healing as well, going through it, and talking does, and it just, I don't know, it just, this is Annabelle's story, it's what happened, and I don't want anyone to feel pity for us, or I don't want it as a sob story, because as I say, I rarely do speak about it, and I choose when I speak, you know. I was very aware of who I wanted to speak about it with, you know, but it is the reality for so many families. We're not the only families that have gone through this, and unfortunately we won't be the only family that go through it in the future. Like, it is, and I know myself how helpful I found listening to other people's stories. But it is as awful as anyone would imagine. And I suppose for us, you have the grief side of it. We're grieving Annabelle, but there's also a very real trauma in what all of us went through. Yeah. And that does kind of carry on in your day-to-day life then after that. So yeah, it that one day, like, and you know, it's easy to read the Pinterest quotes and live every day because, you know, you don't know if you'll wake up tomorrow, but that was Annabelle's life. Like, she actually didn't wake up the next day. And yeah, it's just, there's nothing for it, only it is unfair, and it is, you know, there is no reason behind it, and the accident that happened, there was no preventing it, there was nothing we were aware of. And I think for us, you know, like, it's not like we can ever say, oh, we should have done this or we should have done that. There was nothing. It was a freak accident. And yeah, I do feel like she got the best of care. The ambulance were out as quickly as possible. She was airlifted to Dublin. She had a team of, I think, 12 doctors working on her. And they did everything they could. And it just wasn't enough on the day. Her injuries just were too bad. Sorry, now I know you're pregnant, and I thought last night, I was like, is this madness?
No, I never apologise. It's just, I think it's so impossible for anyone listening, including myself, who hasn't experienced your level of grief. Child loss is so, it's such a particular, profound grief. And I have spoken to some people on the podcast already who've had experienced it, and it makes me realise that I can never understand. And I think Suzanne McLean said, it's like you become a part of a club that you never wanted to be part of.
If you spot someone and you know they've lost a child, you just feel like you have this instant connection. Okay. You just get each other. And that's not demeaning the other people who are trying to understand. Like, I think people are amazing that they do try and understand, but there is just something about meeting someone who's gone through, and that's in every walk of life, like, no matter what you've experienced. But when it comes to child loss, there is this just, they get it.
Yeah, and nobody else can.
No, and I suppose with the grief thing, then that leads into like it is, people only mean the best, but they think, well, if that was me, I would do X, Y, and Z. Okay. If that was me, I wouldn't be able to go away a month later, you know, but you just actually don't know what that's in unless you've walked in their shoes.
Don't know. Yeah.
You don't know. And if that's, you know, I felt myself having to like remind myself, it doesn't matter what other people think. If I'm doing something that helps me or helps my family, or if this is the way we are dealing with our grief, so be it. If someone else doesn't think it's the right way.
Yeah. And that's so important, because everyone experiences difficulty or grief or whatever it is in their own way. And unfortunately, there can be a lot of judgment about how somebody handles it. And I think it's a lesson for all of us to just stop. If there's a little thought in your mind going, I wonder why he or she is doing that, stop it.
Mm.
It's not up to us to judge anyone else and how they respond to a situation. And as you said, if you were doing it for you and your family, well, nothing else matters. Nothing else matters. Did you find that judgment from people?
I don't know. Was it just me, like, overthinking things rather than anyone actually meaning to judge? But it, little things, like, I took it very personally. If they said to me, like, and are you going back to work? And I'd be like, my daughter passed away a month ago. Like, am I meant to be going back to work? But I don't think they meant it in that way. I think it was just conversation. But, and yet, I met a lovely friend and she she said, I assume you haven't gone back to work yet. And to me, I was like, oh my God, like, no, I haven't. And that meant the world to me.
Yeah.
But again, that's not me judging someone. Enda went back to work way before I did. So I'm not judging someone who does choose to go back.
Yeah.
It is hard, like, how are you meant to word it or say it? And yes, for some people, getting busy and getting stuck in works for them. For me, I just had to slow right down. Like, my focus was the two boys, just, and it was conscious decision. It was very much, we need to go back to, are we eating well? Are we getting sleep?
Yeah.
And that was it, like, you know, because people are lovely and they want to come and be there. But by 9 o'clock, I was like, no, like, everyone can go home. I need to get the boys to bed. You still need to get the homework done, you know. So it's just to go back and get those basics, eat well, get your sleep, and then take it from there step by step. But yeah, and for me, I just completely slowed down. I got up, I got the boys out to school. Then I just remember you drop to school and I'd come home and I'd just cry. And then, you know, maybe meet a friend for a coffee. And I'm sure people would think, like, oh my God, she's doing well, she's out for coffee. And, you know, but again, you just only see a snippet of someone's life.
Yeah.
And then you'd pick the boys up and it'd be into the usual homework and dinner. And that's how we got through the first week and then the first month, and just the basics. And it was definitely so difficult. Like, there's no sugarcoating it. And yet, I know, obviously, I share a lot on Instagram, but I would say I hold back a huge amount. The odd time I share a lot of Annabelle, which I love, but how I really feel, I probably don't.
Yeah.
Just because I never want to look like, oh, here's your one on again, looking for sympathy. And maybe people don't think that, but that's just not how I want to come across. And again, I'm not judging anyone who has their Instagram account and runs it whatever way they want. But just for me, that's how I feel.
Okay. And you have to do what's right for you. I absolutely don't think anyone would ever think that of you. But I understand as well that you're doing what feels right for you. And that's all that matters. That's all that matters. And, you know, you do run a gorgeous page. You have such a huge following, people who adore you and love what you're about. And you do share a lot about your, you know, your life and Annabelle. But I can fully appreciate that we are only seeing a certain amount. And, like, I absolutely get that.
Mm.
And even from my own perspective, there's so much of my life that people wouldn't necessarily see either.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably, you know, something for all of us to keep in mind, that while Instagram is a wonderful platform and it's one I really like and I really enjoy, sometimes I think we can feel that we're seeing the full picture, and really I don't think we are with anyone, because there's always a life outside of our social media persona per se.
Yeah.
And it's important to keep an eye on that and be aware of it. So while you were trying to come to terms with the unimaginable and your own grief, you're trying to keep the show on the road for your family.
Yeah.
was that in its, I can imagine in one level it was a help because it was a kind of a distraction, mind the boys, try and keep a sense of normality going. But then I would imagine on the other side, did it make your grieving process even tougher that you couldn't just think of yourself, I suppose.
Yeah.
You weren't just thinking of yourself.
No, which I think was good. I think for it was better that we had another focus and we were very much like, let's try our best to lead by example, you know. Now, the boys did complain. Why did they have to go back to school? And I didn't, because being a teacher, I was like, well, no, I'm just, it's different. Yeah. But that was just chance in their arm. But they really, like, Annabelle's funeral was the Tuesday and they went back to school the following Monday, which seems difficult too. And yet,
routine and normality,
and their friends, and just a lot of it is like you're going to have to do it sometimes, so just get stuck in. No more than something as simple as the grocery shopping. Like the first time I did that, it was torture, and you wouldn't imagine, but when you're walking by the aisles and it's the food, oh, there's Annabelle's yogurts.
Oh God, yeah.
But you don't pick them up. Like it's madness, the things that you never realized would be difficult are suddenly awful. Like, and I remember, like, she was three, but she still ate those pouches that babies eat, which she loved them, and they were fruit, and I bought dozens of them for her and she loved them. But, you know, I just remember standing there staring at them and being heartbroken that I'd never get to buy them again for her, which is daft. But, you know, there's just little things like that, that, but once you did it once and the more you do it, the more you get used to it and you just, you go about it. Because honestly, I'd say if I still wanted someone to do my shopping for me, they would. Like, people just bent over backwards. They would have and did anything for us as a family, and still do such kind things, and the way she's remembered, you know.
You're very known and you're very loved in your community. I get that feeling, because obviously Enda as well, you know, played hurling for Westmeath, very well known in his own right. And then with you, you know, yes, you're a teacher, but you have a following online as well. So it came as no surprise when I heard that the funeral was like a huge turnout of people who wanted to be there to support.
I think we were even shocked, and I know it's like, it's not about numbers and it's not about that, but just the support. Like, I remember the evening of the removal, Annabelle, we brought her home to our own bed, you know, and even we were talking to our Enda's sister and her husband, like, we still talk about it, you know. It's still like, we still can't believe the amount of people. It was a November night in the dark, stood on the lane, like, just, and I hugely, my feeling on it was, well, you know, yes, the people were coming for me and Enda, but to me, they were coming to say goodbye to Annabelle. Like, you were never going to see her again. So that's how I felt. And, you know, again, different people would say, oh, did you not find that so difficult? And no, I would have stood there all week if I had to, for as many people to come. And just, again, to see and feel that support, something I hugely think must be awful for families during COVID, because I know how much it meant to us, and even to this day, like, to think that those people, and after the removal, we were kind of like, the church is going to be empty tomorrow. I think we pretty much saw everyone we could possibly know, but no, like, you drove up to the church and it was full, and then down to the graveyard and there were more people, and it just means a lot. Like, it's hard to describe. I suppose myself and Enda are very fortunate in that we haven't really lost anyone close to us. We both still have both sets of parents, all our siblings. So I suppose this was our first experience of, you know, loss and of the difference and of the importance of a funeral. Like, I don't think we had realized it, even from our side attending them. I don't think we had realized the importance of what you're actually doing.
Yeah.
You know, but I felt for TJ. So then once mind came and he was like, oh, I don't want to go. And we're going, you just, you know, we'll go to mass and then you can put on your tracksuit after and you can play with your cousins. But he thought that amount of people were going to come and shake his hands again.
Okay.
And he was saying, no, it's no shaking hands this time. It's just mass. You'll be fine. You know, but even for Senan, like to see his school teachers come out, yeah. I know that meant a lot to him, you know, and that they didn't have to, but they made the effort. And yeah, it definitely has stuck with us, the support. And even then, moving on from that, we had our tournament and that was huge. And she has jerseys, Annabelle's All-Star jerseys, in pink and grey, and that's what, 2018. So we're, is this 3 summers on?
18? Yeah.
And we still see those jerseys.
Oh, wow.
And they mean so much. And like, I don't know, will Senan want me sharing this, but I just, it melted my heart on Monday. Senan is so 16 and he started working at Cool Camps. And he was with the under 8 group on Monday. And he had his Annabelle's grey jersey on, and a little group of girls came up to him and said, were you at the Annabelle's tournament? And he said, yeah, I was. And they were like, we were there too. It was really good fun. He said, oh, very good. Yeah. And they said, we knew Annabelle. We were in the same play school as her. And she was really nice. And I just thought, like, wow, isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, my God. And they remembered her.
Yeah.
Of course they did, yeah. Wow.
You know, I just thought,
see, her spirit is here and alive. And I suppose as well, by having this conversation today, when you share photos or videos of her, you know, being adorable and being a little maggot, as she seemed to be a lot of the time, which is fabulous. You know, we it feels like we're all connecting with her and that she's here.
Well, I definitely believe, you know, in energies, and I do firmly believe she is here and in spirit, and she leaves signs. And yes, I still talk to her.
Yeah.
And I still say in the morning, like, we go in, her room is as is, and she has a little lamp, and we turn it on in the morning and open her blind, and I say, good morning, Missy Moo. And like, I just chat to her and say, I hope you're having a nice day and you've met lots of friends. And if we're doing something, I'd say, now keep an eye out on your brothers or help them out, or, you know. And I just over the years have spotted little signs. And yeah, I just think, and even that's what I think about, like, energy as well. Like, I think all these people who at the time wish us well and send us strength, and when you say, like, I'm thinking of you or I'm praying for you, I genuinely think they go out, you know, and they help you through, because I don't know where we had the strength to keep going, but you do. And I do think people's well wishes are important, you know.
Absolutely. I'm a huge believer in that. Massive. When you say, you know, you feel that she gives you signs and there are times when she's with you, where do you feel her strongest, in her room?
Well, for me, I like being in her room. I know Enda, not that he likes being at the graveyard, but Enda would go to the graveyard a lot more than I would. I'd take or leave the graveyard. I just find it, if I stop at all and think of the actual reality of what it is in the graveyard. I just can't. Yeah. Whereas I suppose in her room with her pictures and all her little bits and pieces, I just feel way more at ease.
Because you remember her as she was.
Yeah. But again, that's just myself and Enda would be very different in most things in life. So, you know, and it's great that he can accept that I don't go there as often. And I can accept that, well, that's where he gets solace and that's fine, you know.
And I've heard that's very common. I've heard that some people do take huge comfort from going to the grave, placing flowers, you know, having a conversation or saying a prayer. But for other people, it really doesn't work for them.
Mm.
And that's OK. Mm. And again, I suppose it's the message that there is no one size fits all when it comes to dealing with grief and loss. And we all have to find what works for us. But in your situation, because it's such a profound grief, you don't need to explain to anyone as in what you like or what you don't and what works for you, what doesn't. You just do what feels right for you.
Yeah.
And that is always the right thing.
Yeah.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you talk about signs and feeling like, you know, maybe there was a sign and you mentioned numbers at the beginning as well, what kind of things resonate for you? Or can you give me examples of times when you felt that you were given a sign by Annabelle?
Yeah, well, definitely white feathers. And I'm a bit like, I just tell her, like, I want a nice big bright one. No, like, you know, make sure I know. And it will 9 times out of 10 be big and a really white feather.
Okay.
You know, things like that. So random flies, like, because Annabelle hated them, you know. But if you hear one buzzing, you'll just think of her. I remember hopping into the car for the first time after Annabelle's funeral, and there was a fly there, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, is that should I let the fly out? Or, you know, there's just lots of different things that even the likes of a song coming on in the car that you're like, you feel like, what are the chances of that? You know, I feel like I should write these things down, but I don't.
Well, you have them for yourself, and that's the most important place to have them.
Or in Australia. So I went to Australia that Christmas for my sister's wedding, and there was a pink car with a number plate, and written on it was Annabelle. And I was like, if that's not a sign, I don't know what is, you know.
I remember you said that on the podcast with Brian, and I got goosebumps when you spoke about that story.
I think in the beginning I was a lot more reluctant to believe in them, whereas now I very much take them as a sign. And you just kind of know, because they come when you're having a tough time or when you feel you need them.
Yeah.
That's when they'll be there.
Yeah. Just going back to the trip to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the following month.
Yeah, when you say it now, and when I look back now. So, yeah, Annabelle was buried the start of November. And then my sister Grainne had obviously planned her wedding in Perth in Australia for that Christmas.
Yeah.
And all my family were going over. Now, Enda and TJ were always, and Annabelle, we thought we're staying at home, and just myself and Senan were going to go over. Just lots of reasons, like flying five of us to Australia.
Sure,
and
the cost of it, yeah.
Everything. Yeah, yeah. So we just said myself and Senan would go. So obviously Grainne and her fiancé at that time, now husband, came home for Annabelle's funeral. My brother flew home from Taiwan for Annabelle's funeral. Another cousin from Australia. Like, it was just, wow. It was seeing people.
Yeah.
A good friend was in the church the next day, and she had flown home from England. And I would never expect anyone to do that.
Yeah.
But they did, and it meant a lot. But anyway, Grainne was getting married. So obviously, initially, it was like, no way, like we wouldn't go. But then I felt it was the right thing to be there for her. Like, she... Grainne had been there for everything,
yeah,
in my life, and I wanted to be there for her. And I just decided, yeah, myself and Senan would go. All my family were obviously going to be there for Christmas, so it, in a sense, I'm grateful that it was always going to be a very different Christmas.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have coped very well with our traditional,
of course, yeah,
Christmas, have everyone over. So yeah, I was home Christmas Eve for Santa coming, and Santa still left Annabelle presents, and still every year does leave Annabelle a present and will bring it down to her grave. But then St. Stephen's morning, we went to Australia, and you know, it did. It was probably the best way for me to spend Christmas. And I know, yeah, it's myself and Enda weren't together, but he was very well-minded and mollycoddled by his family, and so were TJ. And it just, again, it worked for us. It was such a distraction,
yeah,
and
just
a break,
say, yeah,
and a change. You know, and I suppose, like, I think of, for my parents, like how would you be so happy for one daughter and so heartbroken for another? Like, how would you figure that out? But like, they're amazing. They always have been since day dot. Like, genuinely, we're blessed with mum and dad, and yeah, they're just always there. You know, they don't have to be stuck in the middle of things, but you just know they're always there, and they'll give a hand, and they remember Annabelle in their own way. Everyone does, like, you know, and you go into a house and you'll just always see her picture there somewhere.
Yeah.
And we might mention it, or it might be mentioned to us, but myself and Enda see it, we know it, and we appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you talk about her every day, and she's very much,
yeah,
in your lives, despite not physically,
yeah,
physically being in your lives, but she is in every other sense. She's with you every day.
She really, really is. And she does just very naturally come up in conversation. It's not that we feel we need to force ourselves to remember her. There's, you don't.
Yeah.
And it's even lovely, like, so the school I teach in recently opened a small kind of play area in her memory, and like,
oh,
you know, I know it was all delayed because of COVID, but it was actually probably nicer that it has been this time. And I even found I was away with friends, and we're all in the stage of kids and stuff, and you're chatting and how are the boys, but it, I found for me it was lovely, they were able to say, and Annabelle has her play area, and I thought, I still get to talk about her.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And
that's so important.
Yeah, the fact that they brought it up, I still get to chat about her. She's still remembered. They're still all comfortable around me chatting about her. And that, you know, it's yeah, it means a lot. And I know I have a lot of people would reach out and say, like, my friend or someone I know has lost a child, what should I do or what should I say? And I think it's just that, like, allowing them to speak and listening.
Yeah.
And there's never going to be a solution for what happened. Like, no amount of talking is going to change it, but to know that someone will listen and not say, at least, like, that's a bit of a pet hate of mine.
Sure.
Like, well, at least you have the two boys. Well, at least, you know, something else. But just listen and say, gosh, yeah, it is, it's crap. And, you know, acknowledge it. And I think with a lot of different things in life, it's not necessarily that the person wants a solution. They just want someone to listen and acknowledge. Right. And that's half of it sometimes.
Yeah. It really is, with any problem.
Exactly.
Knowing that you're heard and you're seen is so important. There's nothing more frustrating than opening up to somebody and they're cutting across you, or they're trying to, you know, and you're like, can I just tell you how I feel?
Mm.
Can you just listen to me? And it's difficult. And I, you know, in a very different way, I know there's no comparison, but in my own way, I've been in that situation as well. And it does make you sometimes then realise, well, I can't maybe open up to that person. Or, you know what, I'm going to save that conversation for somebody else. And some people are naturally better at it, I think. Some people are just better listeners. And
well, I'm lucky. I have some really good listeners in my life. I do. I have some really go-to people and they would listen forever and ever.
Yeah, and you just glanced at your sister who's in the room with you today.
Yeah.
One of your three sisters, Doreen, is in the room.
Yeah.
And it does sound like you're a tight-knit family. You're close.
We are, yeah. We're normal. Like,
you kill each other, do you?
Yeah. Like, we're not like the Waltons.
And yeah, sure.
It's you know, we're very much a normal. And I think sometimes maybe that was... That's the difficult thing about myself. And when people look at us, it's like, whoa, we're just like them. Like,
yeah,
they're so normal and this happened them. And you suddenly realize, well, like, it can happen any of us.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, we're not there in a newspaper like us, you know, like out in Hollywood. Or we're just the most ordinary family. And this just... happen and it does shake you to the core, because you think, wow. And even now it's like, it happened to us, but I'm like, not, you just think you don't know what's going to happen. And I probably have turned into much more of a worrier than I ever was, because you now just think, like, the worst can happen. And it's an awful way to live your life. And I suppose I was very lucky I never did. You know, and there's people, and I'm sure no matter what life experience you go through, whether it's losing a child, whether it's being ill, you suddenly, you have a lot more worries about this could happen again, or it could happen, a loved one. You're even just down to, like, phone calls now. You know, I remember for a long time finding it, like, I rang Daddy that morning and I found it just hard to ring him in the morning time, because I was like, I don't want to worry him. I don't want him to think I'm ringing because something has happened.
Okay.
You know, little things like that. You kind of ring and you're like, nothing's wrong. I'm just ringing to say, will you pick up or do, you know, little things like that, that you took for granted beforehand. But now they have a different meaning.
You seem to be such a considerate person. I get the feeling from listening to you that you're very nurturing as a personality, and you want to mind people. You're constantly kind of trying to think about other people while managing your own feelings through it all. Can I ask, did you get help with, in terms of, you know, keeping her spirit very much alive, talking about her, keeping her room as it was that something that you instinctively decided to do yourselves, or did you get some advice or a bit of help with that on how to maybe process and live with the grief?
I think a lot of it was instinctive. A lot of even like decisions around the funeral, around songs, around, like someone said to me, we each wore a pink rose. And they were like, how did you even think I want a pink rose? And I said, I don't know. It just
felt right.
Yeah. You know, there's so many decisions and yet so many are just instinctive. But then also, you know, we have close family and friends who know us so well, like, and know, like, no, Eileen wouldn't want that, or
yeah,
she would want that, or, you know, so people were very aware and conscious of, like, well, what do we think? Or just asked us straight out, like, well, Temple Street had a fantastic bereavement team. So obviously Annabelle passed away there. And there was a lady there that we met on the day, Anne, and then another lady, Anne-Marie. So they came to visit us in our home a few weeks later, maybe. And for me, I did find that support huge. I suppose initially I thought, oh my gosh, we all need counsellors and psychiatrists and psychotherapists and anything that started with psycho anything, we would need it because... And they were fantastic at explaining, and this stuck with me and maybe it could stick with someone else. They were said it's like a pyramid, and down at the widest part, at the very bottom, if you imagine, you get your support from your the most support from your closest family and your closest friends. Then the next layer is maybe the school, like for the boys, their schools, and they could support. And then the next layer could be your community. So for us, we were involved in the GA with Delvin and Clonkill, and they were huge. Like, that was a huge part, actually, that helped us as a family. And then she said at the top, at the tip of the pyramid, if you feel you need it, you can get some support from outside help, from counsellors and therapists. And, you know, but she said, don't always assume that you need it straight away.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought for me, that made a great amount of sense, because sometimes I think if I had €60, I could spend it on a counsellor, or I could just go for coffee and dinner with two of my closest friends. And that could actually may mean as much as spending it. Now, we have, though, I'm not going to say we have gone to counsellors, both myself and Enda went separately. And look, we tried it. Absolutely, the man I went to was absolutely lovely. I would never fault him. I just didn't feel I needed to continue going, or I didn't at that time feel I needed it. And again, the boys, I'm very conscious that I don't want to, they both have gotten a bit, but I don't go into it in detail because I think that's private to them and that's for them, you know. But Temple Street did now stay with us for a year, and they'd call on and off, and they met with the boys, and they were always the other end of the phone, which I think, like, I had that lady on my favourites list.
Yeah,
and just knowing, not that I rang her regularly, but knowing I had someone. Like, if TJ said X, Y and Z, what's the right or wrong thing to do? And of course, like, there was never a right or wrong thing. There isn't.
Yeah.
But talking it through with someone made a difference. And I think for me, because they had been there since day dash. They had seen us, like, at our worst. I just felt a connection with them, you know. And yeah, I'm so grateful for them. I felt like that was probably the most important kind of outside support that we got.
Yeah.
At the time. And then kind of after a year, the wean off. And I remember the first time they told me that, like, you know, usually it'd be a year, or I thought, no, like, you can never leave my side. Like, I won't get through this. And then it just does gradually, after a year, you learn ways of coping and you learn what works for you. And sometimes you learn through doing the wrong thing. Not necessarily wrong, but I know Annabelle's first birthday, we had both families over, the entire family, and it's what we wanted to do. And it was lovely. But then by her next birthday, I thought maybe we'll just do the four of us and we'll go away and we'll try it that way.
Yeah.
And see how that goes. So sometimes it is trial and error by doing it one way. You kind of think, well, maybe we could try it a different way. Things like that, you know. You just, you live and you learn kind of what works. And I can kind of nearly at this stage see a pattern in myself. Like I go along okay and then I know when the tears are starting to well up and I... And then you hit a day where you just, you let them out. And for me, crying is a huge release.
Yeah.
And it helps me. And again, that's just me. So, and again, I'm a talker. Talking to people helps. So, end is totally different. I don't know. He has his own ways, you know.
And that's why you're together. As is often the case with my partner, we're... While fundamentally there are huge similarities, it's also massive differences between us.
Yeah.
And in the majority of relationships, that's the way it is. Because if you were attracted to another version of you, it probably wouldn't work. And same for him. If he was attracted to somebody that was very like him, it wouldn't work.
Two enders wouldn't work. Sorry.
Two islands would be grand.
Two islands would be wonderful.
Love it.
No, but it's just, and even with the boys, they're very different. But you do, you just... You know, you learn how to keep her memory alive without overdoing it. And the boys, like little things. I remember early on, my screensaver was Annabelle, and TJ said to me, "I know she's your screensaver. You loved her the most." And I was like, "No, I did. Like, I love you all the same."
Yeah.
But you just don't know what's going on in their heads. So the fact that he said that and you could talk it through and explain it. And then I learned from there, the screensaver is all of us. And yet I've already thought, like, what screensaver will I use when the new baby comes?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I know I'll like do a collage or something, but it's just that reality that the new baby will never met Annabelle. But, and it's a whole new kind of navigating, like, do you know, I would have read things about children born after a sibling passed away and always feeling in their shadow. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to create that. But I want this new baby to be aware it has a sister, Annabelle. So, you know, there's with the new baby, there's other things as well that, again... If Annabelle was still with us, we wouldn't even be considering. Like, you wouldn't be wondering what screensaver. You wouldn't. Yeah. Like, I wonder if it's a girl, would I actually put some of Annabelle's clothes on it?
Yeah.
Or not? I don't know. Like, again, this little girl's room, and you have another baby, like, will kind of play with her toys. And again, there's two of us to consider. I'd be a lot more easygoing and, sure, let them play. But, you know, I have other people to consider too. And they mightn't think, no, they're Annabelle's, leave them be. So there's lots of other conversations that will have to be had. And I'm sure there's things we haven't even thought about that we're going to come across. But even in the fact that being pregnant for me, every checkup, every scan, meet a stranger, and you're expecting, and is this your first baby? And I say, oh no. And then that second year, you say third or fourth, but I will 9 times out of 10 say fourth.
Sure.
You know, but then you put someone in the awkward, and what ages are your others? And you're thinking, you know, so it's after bringing a lot of things up again, simply being pregnant, by going into checkups, by being asked those questions, natural, normal, everyday questions that I don't think people should stop asking them in any manner, shape or form. But for me, it's bringing a lot of things up again.
You remind me of an article that Micheál Martin did. Did you read that? With the Times.
I thought that was fantastic.
And that was one of the things that came up when he was asked about how many kids. And I suppose, again, these are questions or are answers that we don't think of unless we've been through it ourselves, of how will that feel for somebody if I'm asking this question? Because we, I suppose the truth is, none of us ever know really what's going on in people's lives.
No.
And how often do we meet people and we just have kind of idle chit chat? But that idle chit chat might be just, you might be pressing some very, very sensitive buttons in
but
the process.
I don't think we can go through life, though, walking in eggshells.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't like to see it become a thing that you just don't ask the question.
I know, and people's intention is the most important.
That is my thing. And all along, even some of the things that were said to us, you think, really? But nobody is intending to say something hurtful.
Yeah.
You know?
They just don't think sometimes.
Yeah. And do you know what? I probably was that person. And I think maybe that's why I might be quite okay with it, because I'm thinking I must have said some stupid things in my time. You know, I don't think anyone's intention is coming from a bad place. So that's why I'd never. And they're probably going home kicking themselves more than I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. But yeah, so that's kind of, I suppose, with the new baby, there's this whole other layer of questions that you might not typically have to face into, you know, but so many families have those same questions.
And I suppose all you can do is take it a day at a time. So far, you've been, you know, making decisions kind of based on your instinct and what feels right. So that won't steer you wrong either in the future when, you know, their little baby sister or brother comes into the world in November, that whatever you decide to do, you'll do it together as a family and it'll be the right thing.
Yeah.
But I can only begin to imagine that the thinking ahead and the what if, and as you said, you've probably become more of a worrier now, naturally, after what you've been through. So you probably analyse what'll this be like, what'll that be like. And I can only imagine being pregnant at the best of times is huge. It's huge on your physical well-being, mental and emotional, but with everything you've gone through, there are extra layers. But I get the feeling that you're allowing yourself feel happy about it too.
In general, though, that was a big thing, like from day dot, like you had to allow yourself feel happy again.
Yeah.
Without the guilt.
Yes.
Because in the beginning, if you found yourself smiling, you automatically thought, why am I smiling? Like, I am so sad. And you felt guilty. Okay. You're like, if Annabelle sees me smiling, like, that's awful. But it was 100% a conscious decision to allow happiness in, you know?
Yeah.
And I think having a baby, like, there's no bigger kind of sense of happiness.
Yes.
So I don't know, but I think it's emotional. I think I cried when all of them were born, so that's not going to be any different, you know? Like, there'll still be tears regardless. But yeah, like, you have to. And yet, I suppose, you don't want this to sound the wrong way, but when people see you or hear I'm pregnant, you don't want them thinking, now she's grand, pregnant, happy again, all is well in her world. You're like, no, I'm still so incredibly sad.
Yeah.
That Annabelle is not here. But separate to that, I'm happy that we're having a new baby. Like, just having another child does not replace or diminish the sadness we feel that we don't have Annabelle, you know?
Yeah, of course, of course. Yeah. Any baby, any child that is lost, they can never, ever be replaced.
No. No. And that's, and people are lovely and they say, oh, Annabelle's sending this baby. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm worried about. I'm like, please send one that sleeps. You know, she's full of development. And look at, you know, they're just, I suppose my biggest worry is, like, Annabelle had such a strong character, just not compare the children. And again, if it's a boy, I think naturally there's less comparison. Whereas if it's a girl, it's easier to compare. So much of that kind of stuff is going on in my head. But I'm happy that I'm aware of it, that I'm conscious that, okay, try not compare or things like that. So it's all just bridges we'll have to cross, and yeah, we will, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know?
So you're due in November.
Mm.
And unfortunately, that was also the month that Annabelle passed away. So it'll be 3 years this November.
Yeah.
And then there'll be this new addition in the family. That's pretty loaded, isn't it?
It is. It's not that we planned to have a baby in November. You know, it just, again, I think I've gotten used to it. In life, things do not go to plan. Like my whole life, I don't think anything goes to plan. So look, it is what it is. Perhaps there's a reason behind it. Again, I'm booked in for a section. I suppose in my head, I just don't want to get in too near Annabelle's anniversary. And yet I'm like, look, if heaven forbid there's some reason I go early, so be it. You can't control it. And then our wedding anniversary is November 3rd, so the day after Annabelle passed away. So yeah,
it's okay.
It's a full on month, but look, it's such is life. You kind of can't plan exact dates and times, and you just go with the flow, because what else can you do?
Yeah. How do you mind yourself? You mentioned there that, you know, you can feel it. You can sometimes feel when the tears are going to come, and you're going to have maybe a day where you just need to let it all out.
Mm.
But on a day-to-day basis, do you have things in place that help you? Because I know that getting out for your coffee and doing that is really important.
Yeah.
For minding yourself.
Yeah, like I kind of wish I was a person who like took into being real fit and exercising, and that helped me, but that didn't happen. No, it just being around some good friends, having a cup of coffee, again, hopping into bed with the tablet and watching reality TV is my switch off, my brain time.
Yeah, sure.
And again, it's maybe not the typical like go for a walk and get fresh air and drink water. It's like hop into bed with a cup of tea and a bar of chocolate, and that works for me.
Yeah.
You know, and I do feel like, yes, I am very lucky. I'm at the stage where my boys would notice if I was in bed or in the kitchen doing the dishwasher. Like they're quite content if they're either at sports or they're playing their PlayStation, you know. And I am very conscious as well, like when the baby comes, there'll be no hopping into the bed with the tablet, like, so, you know, it just, I'll have to be mindful of it's going to be busier. But I still think, and I have to say, Enda, my husband, I don't want to give him a big head, but he is very good. And like, if I'm ever upset, I'll always say, geez, I'm sorry for crying. And he'll always say, like, don't be. And even that praise 3 years on or whatever, you know, that he'll still sit there and put up with me in floods of tears means a lot to me, you know.
Of course.
So yeah, it just, and again, I think I've slowed down a lot. I took a career break, which suited me. I just felt I did go back for on job share, and I just felt like I needed a bit more time. And, you know, sometimes if my head is in a negative space, I will like say like, oh, that's ridiculous. Like other people can go back to work and other people can do X, Y, and Z. But I'm like, I'm not other people.
Sure.
I like slowness. I like taking it easy. I like as well that through Instagram, I still got to do a bit of work, but more on my terms. There wasn't a clocking in and clocking out, and it was very much on my terms, and I still got to be creative and think about things, you know. So that's where this year, the career break, it did work out well for me. And I did find myself actually like thinking so far ahead. I'm like, well, after the baby goes back, like I'll be back to work, and who'll mind the baby and who'll this? And then I just had to stop myself and say, no, like there's, and I did it when the others were small, and I would have been worrying about, you know, getting Annabelle to school and a minder. And you just have to stop yourself and say, you just don't know that far ahead in the future. And I learned it the hard way. Like Annabelle didn't get to primary school. So, you know, there was worries that I had that never came to fruition. So I do try stop myself now and be like, look, take this year and then see where it goes after that. And that's all I can do, I suppose, at the moment, rather than thinking too far ahead into the future.
Yeah. Before I let you go, are there any particular memories? And I know you probably have a flood of Annabelle memories to cherish forever, but are there any particular moments with her that stand out or that you replay in your mind as that was just a gorgeous time with her?
No, there's none that stand out because we did spend a lot of time just sitting playing Barbies.
Yeah.
And I suppose TJ always wanted me to play tractors and I don't know how to play tractors. Like, what am I meant to do? Whereas Barbies I could do, and like she'd put on a little twang and she'd have an old phone and she'd just be full of chat and let's go do this and let's go do that. And so just sitting with the Barbies playing with her, you know, the simple thing. It's not, it wasn't the big days out. It wasn't. Yeah. The foreign holidays abroad were lovely and we enjoyed them and slathered sunblock on them and all of that. But it genuinely was the sitting on the couch, having the chats, playing with the Barbies, those kind of things. And just, you know, it was very lucky the week of midterm, we'd done lots of nice things together. We actually had a little Halloween party and we had all mom and dad and the cousins and everyone was there and it was lovely. And just having those photos and videos again, I suppose you probably see on Instagram, I always just took a lot of photos, yeah, and videos, right. And now but the thing is they were mostly of Annabelle. Like, TJ doesn't like the camera, so he wouldn't really be a fan, whereas I've so many of Annabelle. And you do wonder, is there a reason behind that? Who knows? But I'm just glad I have them. Like, I wish I had more, but look at, I still am lucky to have the amount I do have. And I think the photos that mean the most are just the ordinary. Like, I've one of us standing at the sink on St. Patrick's Day peeling carrots. And yeah, that's the one that I love more than the posed in the good clothes ones. You know, it's those ordinary. The kitchen is probably a mess behind me, but I don't see that anymore.
And that's a really important message for all of us, you know, with kids, without kids, but just to capture real moments rather than the ones when you're standing, smiling, posing. It's those beautiful moments of normality that really capture what I suppose in that moment it captured your relationship as mother and daughter.
Yeah.
Do something as simple as a family is just getting the dinner ready.
Yeah, and has gotten better. Because, you know, like before you'd be like, Enda, Enda. Yeah, and then like the moment would be gone. But he's good now at just getting those ordinary moments. And I think they're for me anyway, they're the most special.
Yeah. Eileen, thank you so much for being here and for allowing yourself to have this conversation, especially now that you're pregnant, because, you know, it's an added level of emotion, of hormones, of everything else that's going on. But I also know how important it is to you and to your family that you talk about Annabelle and keep her spirit alive. And she will always be with you and with all of us because of the fact that you talk about her, and those who knew her and loved her talk about her, and the more we can talk about her and remember her. And I never met her, but I feel like I did from listening to you and seeing the photos and videos. And, you know, I just think she would have gone on brilliant with my little man, you know. They would have had the crack together.
Be up to divament.
Yeah. Just a gorgeous personality and just full of life.
Yeah. And she lived her 3.5 years. She had a good life, and that saying of it's not the number of years but the quality of the years, I do feel like she had a good 3.5 years and she fitted so much in. There was very little she didn't fit in.
Yeah.
So you know, that gives comfort. And thank you for having me, and apologies for all the tears. I know two pregnant hormonal women in one room.
Yeah.
But thank you so much.
Not at all. Thank you. And sure, look, I'll be keeping an eye on your page, following your pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Eileen, thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
This was an extremely challenging conversation for Eileen, but I really think that because of Annabelle, we'll cherish our loved ones all the more. And that in itself is a beautiful legacy. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real Conversations.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.